You are Locked On AFL, your daily AFL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On AFL. I am your host, Kane Pittman.
Particularly with a pathetic effort from Pitt. I mean, it was the most disgraceful display I've ever seen from a big film. That's pretty hard on an individual, but he's going to have to live with that.
And alongside me in Hotel Victoria is the man, Josh Lloyd.
Lloyd.
Kane, yes, I'm here. We're locked down. We're going to be locked down for the foreseeable future. And the AFL, of course, fixturing chaos. The first thing we want to talk about is the potential of games being condensed in. So it's not going to necessarily be rounds. We're not going to have the traditional, or now traditional, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. There's going to be games all over the place. Teams are going to be on 5 and 4 day breaks to try and get as many games in the next 32, or is it 31 days now? I'm not even sure what day we're at. while these teams are interstate before they come back to Victoria and then are never allowed to leave their houses again.
Well, listen, I've said this the whole time. If you're giving me the option between watching AFL 360 and on the couch in these shows, which I typically actually love, but if you're giving me the choice between watching those or actual AFL games right through the week, give me AFL games. I'm in Geelong. So currently right now, we aren't locked down. I'm anticipating that might not be the case for much longer. We'll see what happens. But either way, if I think back to the 3 months that we had, or however long it was, where we were in isolation, locked down, weren't able to do anything outside, please, give me some footy, give me sport every single night. I think it's fantastic. And the important thing is, by the sounds of it, from the reaction we're hearing from the players, they're up for it. They're good to go. They're in these hubs. They're away from home as well. They want to play footy as well. So I think this is a really good option, potentially, to save the AFL some hassles down the road with fixturing, based on the fact that we don't know what's going to happen. Most of the Victorian players yesterday speaking about it were like, yeah, we're coming home in 32 days. Well, they might be coming home for a little bit for a bye, maybe a 2 week bye, but they're not going to be able to play. So things are going to get difficult.
Yeah, and this, okay, we've got no idea what's going to happen Monday. So in 32 days, so much is going to change as to how this goes. But this looks like a possibility that we're going to get some Monday night games. Maybe we get some weird Wednesday nighters. We might get 7 days a week of footy. It might be a absolute cornucopia of AFL action for us to consume during this time frame, as they're on their feet and dancing around and changing things. But the other stuff that we want to talk about is father son players, Kane, and why we bring that up today?
Well, the Pies looks like potentially on Friday night they'll unveil their team Thursday night, so a little bit later today as we're recording here. There's potential for them, I believe, to have 5 father sons in the same team, which is absolutely absurd, and a real hat tip to those the fathers, the Collingwood players, the ex-Collingwood players that have brought up some pretty talented young boys into playing AFL footy for the Pies.
Yeah, so we're looking at the two Brown boys. You've got Moore, Dacos, and now Kelly coming into the team to be the fifth father-son player. And then I saw an article during the week about another Dacos, Nick Dacos, I believe it is. It's very, very highly regarded as a prospect looking to potentially come next season as well. And he is, I believe, more highly regarded than his brother Josh.
So it's interesting. I was looking through the father-son list, the all-time list, and there's some incredible names starting to come through. I mean, guys that are our age, between 25, 40, around that range that have watched footy through the 90s and through the early 2000s, you're now starting to see some names of players that you remember watching, and that was never the case years ago. So now, Trent Burgoyne, I see on the list, is going to Port Adelaide. That's Peter Burgoyne's son. Of course, Sean is still playing in the damn AFL, and those two played in the same grand final back in 2004, Peter and Sean. So it's incredible to see that name on the list. But there's a bunch of players like this one. Will Kelly, obviously, the son of Craig Kelly. That's the one we're talking about with Collingwood this week, probably getting a game from all reports. So what I thought we could do, when I was watching the news last night and I saw this news, I thought, why don't we give our top 3 father sons in AFL history? And as I said, it's a pretty expansive list when you go on this Wikipedia page that I've got up and check all the names. So why don't we start with 3? You go, and then I'll give my 3rd, and then we'll roll it down from there.
All right. Now, before I do that, though, just a quick, do you like the father son rule?
Yeah, well, I think it's great for nostalgia purposes for sure.
Yeah, I like it. I think there's obviously, and especially with the introduction of new teams, it takes a while for those guys to come in and be able to get these players coming through. But we're seeing some of those guys come through now, but that won't be fully realised for probably 20 or so years for the Gold Coast and GWS guys, but even more importantly, like Fremantle and Port, as we're seeing some of those guys come in, but they just don't have that rich pool of players to pick from. But yeah, I like it as well from that perspective, and I like the way there's sort of a bit of a draft penalty coming through with it now, that if you do want these guys, you do have to, you know, pay up a little bit for it, especially when those guys are pretty high level players. But the third player on my list is someone who I think is probably going to be on your list, and that is Matty Scarlett, who is Father John. Played for Geelong, of course. Matty Scarlett, considered in his era the best fullback of the time, one of the best fullbacks of recent history as well. He played 284 games for Geelong, so obviously a very, very successful father-son pick for the Cats at number three.
Well, this is funny, because I said to you before we started recording that I hope we don't end up with the same top three. We didn't discuss this, but we might here, because yes, number three, Matthew Scarlett, 284 games, three flags, six-time All-Australian, best and fairest thrown in there as well. And let me just say, we'll go through a few of them at the end, but there was some honourable mentions that would find themselves very unlucky not to be on this list. Who have you got at number two?
Number two is an interesting one here. I'm not going to spoil all of the names that it could have been, but if we're just talking about pure talent, I'm going to take Ben Cousins at number two, who was a father-son under the rules initially with West Coast, because his father, Brian, played a lot of games for Perth, and that's how those father-sons worked for the Eagles back in the days. But I have got Ben Cousins at number two, played 238 games, of course, played for Richmond as well at the end, won a Brownlow, won premierships. So Benny Cousins at number two.
Yeah, I had Cousins number two as well, but then I scrubbed him. I went the moral high ground based on the way that things ended. I've gone with Jono Brown. 230 games, clearly the end and the way things finished for him with a bunch of injuries and some real scares with his head and the head knocks that he had. But you think about Jonathan Brown through the absolute prime in those Brisbane years, three-time premiership player. And again, one of those guys, one of the real last intimidators I think we've had in the game. I mean, he was an absolute force and maybe at his goal-kicking best in those years when the Lions dropped off a little bit and he was still standing up and kicking bags of 8, 9, 10. I think he had a really good game, a game that stands out to me against Essendon at Marvel Stadium back in the day as well. But John O'Brien, I mean, everyone loved watching him play. I've got him number two.
Yeah, he was in the discussion for me. I probably could have had him at number three, but didn't end up going that direction. Number one, I think we're going to be unanimous here. It is, of course, Brett Ebert. No, it's Gary Ablett Jr. Just played his 350th over the weekend. He's in discussion to be the best player of all time. So I think it's pretty fair that he's the best father-son of all time.
Yeah, I've got him as well. I mean, 350 games and counting, two Brownlows, two flags, eight All-Australians, five MVPs. I mean, the record is pretty insane. Look at some of these names that are here in the father-son list, though. Obviously, Dustin Fletcher played 400 games. Heath Shaw's cracked 300. Matthew Richardson is in there. Tom Hawkins for the Cats is there. Joel Bowden, Travis Cloak, Josh Kennedy, who Hawthorn let go. They had some success, so I don't think they regret it too much, but clearly he's had a fantastic career. Ashley McIntosh, Luke Darcy, Job Watson, Jared Waite, Brett Ebert. I mean, you can just keep going down the list. I mean, the father-son has done well for a number of clubs, and I have to admit, maybe none more so than the mob I follow.
Yeah, Geelong's had a pretty good record. Just to, you know, on Dustin Fletcher, shout out to Ken, who was my high school coach, footy and cricket. So big Ken Fletcher, the old coach back in the high school days. I think the Bulldogs have done pretty well out of it. We've got a bunch of guys there: Lockie Hunter, Tom Liberatore, Mitch Wallace, Zane Cordy, all in the team at the moment. Oh, Riley West as well. So there's another one. So actually, you talk about Collingwood having five father-sons. The Bulldogs have five father-sons. If Hunter comes back in this week, the Bulldogs will have five father-sons running around: Wallace, Liberatore, Hunter, West, and Cordy. So yeah, they'll have the five in there at the moment. And of course, they're benefited with Luke Darcy back in the day there too. So yeah, an interesting quirk of our game. And I think it's going to be more interesting as we get some of these names coming through. And of course, the father-daughter rule. The Bulldogs picked up Chris Grant's daughter in the last AFLW draft. And Geelong got a father-daughter selection as well. I think it's Millie Brown. Yeah, Paul Brown's daughter. So father-daughter coming into play as well.
Yeah, we're just waiting now as Cats fans for the next wave. So we've had those premiership teams. Now we're waiting for all those guys to have their kids, and they'll roll through and hopefully play for the Cats in about 20 years' time. But speaking of Geelong, I said this in yesterday's podcast, and this is going to be a weekly thing from me. I'm going to label another game the game of the year. I think tonight at the SCG, which I have to keep reminding myself, the game is at the SCG, neutral site, Cats and Lions. Brisbane, no doubt about it, the form team in the league. They really handled Port Adelaide. The best quarter of football we've seen all season in the second quarter there, kicking 6 goals to one and blowing that game wide open. This one's going to be really fascinating, and maybe more so the fact that it is at the SCG. This is a ground the Lions haven't won at for a long, 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 long time. Different dimensions. I mean, people talk about GMHBA Stadium all the time. It's skinny, but you can get compressed up a little bit at the SCG. It's a shorter ground, smaller in between the 50-meter arcs, and I don't know. It's going to be an interesting game for two teams that aren't all that familiar with their surroundings.
Yeah, the SCG, the size will be interesting because we know how fast Brisbane is playing in terms of their attacking speed and transition and getting the ball forward. So that can really... things can get away from you pretty quickly at the SCG if you do let them get out. But it is, yeah, with that condensed space, it is a little bit easier to compress. But yeah, the flip side of that is if you do break it out, then you can get into trouble. Of course, let's talk about the changes. We talked about it yesterday. Alice Yeoman didn't take much part in that Port Adelaide game. He's out. Dane Zorko comes back in, who's been dealing with Achilles calf issues. Well, Jack Stephen is out for Geelong. And Sam Simpson, someone who hasn't played a ton of footy, he comes in to replace Stephen. I thought there was a chance that maybe Ablett might not play. There was talk of maybe him resting this game, but he has been named at this point. What can you tell us about Simpson?
Yeah, another father-son. So father-son from Sean Simpson, who played with the Cats in the 90s. He's pretty good skills, but he's very slim. He's a very slight build, so we'll see. But they call him Silky. He's out there. He's got pretty good skills, so we'll see. Hasn't played a lot of footy. I don't think he played a game last year, but played some footy the season before. He's been around for a couple of years. The one thing about Jack Stephen, it's interesting because I saw a lot of the news outlets were saying that he was dropped. It was very clearly labelled as managed from the Cats. I think that they've learnt. I think they've learnt their lesson. And Gary Ablett's the one you pointed at, from guys like Gary Ablett last year that they ran into the ground, and by the time they got to the finals, they were just completely out of gas. I thought Jack Stephen actually looked okay last week. He looked like he was getting his touch back because those first couple of weeks against Carlton and Melbourne, he was just fumbling everything. He was looked very clearly like a guy that hadn't played a lot of footy over really the last 18 months. So,
he also looked in a similar shape to Ben Cunnington. So yeah, probably needed a little bit of a rest just in this one coming up with a compressed schedule coming up.
Yeah, no doubt. And Gary Ablett, the only one comment I will make about Gary Ablett, I wasn't surprised that he did play. I mean, a lot of attention this week based on his family situation. I think if he was going to go up there this week, maybe, and this is complete speculation, I'm just speculating here, but maybe he wanted to play this week. Obviously, he's not a guy that's in the media a lot. Doesn't get a lot of attention, so maybe for him it'll be a distraction after leaving his family and getting up there and playing. But what are you looking at from this game? What do you want to watch? Because this right now, second versus third, two teams that have been in pretty damn good form.
Well, it's the Lions forward line. We talk about Charlie Cameron and Rayner, Hipwood, McStay. It's a pretty big forward line. Also big in terms of big scoring, and that's how this whole team's been going. I want to see how Geelong's back six are at the moment. Listed at Colajasny, Henry, Blissavs, Buse, Taylor and O'Connor. That's the back six on the named team sheet. How are they going to be able to handle that Brisbane forward line? And one thing I looked at, which you can find on the AFL stats site, is contested defensive one-on-ones and win percentage. And Brisbane's back six, all of those guys are winning the contested one-on-ones at 67% or better. The worst out of Brisbane's back six is Leicester at 67% win. For Geelong, a lot of the guys are going really, really well at 75% win percentage in the one-on-ones, and that is Colajasny, Henry, Blitzarves, and Harry Taylor. But the problem there is O'Connor and Buse. Buse only had one, apparently, one-on-one defensive contest, but O'Connor, seven of them, and he's only won two of them. And if he gets in an isolated situation with Hipwood or with McStay or with Cameron, and it is small sample size, but that's how is O'Connor going to look if he has been routinely beaten so far this season in one-on-ones? That could be a problem with so many offensive options up there for Brisbane.
Yeah, I think your point leads into mine, because the two guys that I want to look at from Brisbane, and this is going to be really significant when you look at that Geelong back line, because if you wanted to pick something apart from the Cats game over the season so far this year, it's that they have looked vulnerable with quick movement in an open forward 50 for the opposition. We saw last week when Gold Coast got on top, that was how. And King was really causing problems when he got those one-on-ones. When the ball hit the ground, the Suns looked dangerous. Carlton, very much the same when they went down to GMHBA and beat Geelong. So two guys that I think are going to be pivotal to the Lions' success in this one, Daniel Rich and Grant Birchall, because they use the ball from the back line so well. When we spoke about disposals on yesterday's podcast and what they mean, we both said that kicking efficiency and how you use the ball and the direct nature of your disposals are what are really telling in footy in 2020. So Daniel Rich right now, fourth in the league, this is among defenders, so fourth in the AFL among score involvements with 18, fourth in the AFL among defenders, metres gained, he's averaging 422 metres gained per game, and he's second at Brisbane for kick efficiency at 78%, particularly on the small SCG. If Daniel Rich gets the ball in his hands, we've all seen him. I mean, this guy's got one of the most powerful legs in the AFL. This is a guy that legitimately at the SCG can get you a rebound 50 and an inside 50 on the same kick. And it's that direct nature that the Lions have been playing with this year. There's been a lot of talk about them going through the middle more, becoming more direct, becoming more attacking. That's how they'll get the Cats on the back foot. And the other guy that's been underrated, so I said Rich is number two at Brisbane for kick efficiency. Number one is Grant Birchall. And he doesn't get a lot of the footy, but if you watch him every single time Grant Birchall touches the footy, immediately, absolutely every single time, his first look is into the guts. He's been around for so long. He's played on the biggest stage. He's not afraid to take that risky kick, and he backs in his own skills. So he's tied for ninth in score involvements in the AFL with 13. And as I said, he's number one in Brisbane for kick efficiency. So he's been a really handy addition. He only played 8 games over the last 3 seasons, and that led you to believe that he was probably done, because over his first 11 seasons, he averaged 22 games a year. I mean, he was so reliable, so resilient, and never got hurt. So Grant Birchall has been a huge addition when you consider they lost Hodge, who's a similar guy. Backs his skills, willing to take the risk, experience. So Birchall and Rich, if they're getting the footy and are free to use their foot skills, the Cats could find themselves in a bit of trouble with the guy you're talking about, Charlie Cameron, getting out the back.
Yeah, exactly. And those score involvements from Birchall and Rich are really important. And the fact that they're using the ball so well is that they're able to get involved and not only defend well, but really set up so much of Brisbane's attack from down there. I guess it helps to have Harris Andrews sitting behind you, knowing that, okay, I can take a little bit of a risk, because if it gets over the top, this bloke's going to have a decent chance of at least splitting a contest, if not winning it outright. So having that confidence. But then I think the same thing goes with the other players, having the confidence to know that when Rich gets it, then I can lead 50, 60 metres up the ground and the ball's going to hit me on the chest. And that quick transition play, again, on a ground like Sydney, like the SCG, that penetrating, accurate kicking from Rich, getting involved, could really blow things up quickly for Geelong.
Yeah, no question. And it's also important to note the Cats obviously still without Tom Stewart as well, who we know
absolutely
is that guy that reads the play really well and provides that drive and attack going back the other way. So, there's a real opportunity here for the Lions to get on top. And as you pointed to, the forward line is going to be really dangerous. The Cats back line are going to be under the pump. And I think, from what we've seen so far this season, that starts from defense. What about the game on Friday night? Should we move on to this one? Because this was equally interesting. Collingwood, we've seen them on Friday night a lot so far this season. They take on Hawthorn this week. It's been a huge week for the Pies, and it's all been off-field stuff. Now it's time for them to get a chance to go onto the field. Before we start, this game's at Giant Stadium. Now, the Hawks have never won there. And it's kind of interesting now that they find themselves in New South Wales playing this neutral site game. They're 0-4 at Giant Stadium with an average losing margin of 32 points, including losing to the Giants last week. So it hasn't been a happy hunting ground for them. The Pies have also lost 3 games there in a row. What are you expecting from this one in these strange games that are going to become very normal over the next month or so at neutral grounds.
Well, the record at Giants Stadium to me doesn't really mean anything because that's against one specific opponent, and that specific opponent is not playing in this game. So I don't think it's a Hawthorn can't play at the ground and Collingwood has struggled recently but has played okay at the ground. It's the fact of how they match up versus the Giants versus the ground. It'd be interesting to see how the ground holds up after some of those divots were chopped up over the last couple of weeks. What I want to see here, obviously the Collingwood response, what they do with Mason Cox, because he was an absolute passenger last week, and is Kelly coming in to replace him? There was some talk that they were all working together down in the forward line at training yesterday, so maybe they're looking to play a three big forward line, which would be an interesting departure from what Collingwood has been doing. But what I want to see is Collingwood, we know they get just a ton of possessions. Like, they overpossess the ball at times, and we saw that little passage of play before halftime last Friday night against Essendon. They have more possessions, but they gain less metres than Hawthorn while getting the same inside 50s, and they have a higher disposal efficiency. So it's interesting that they are more efficient, they get the ball more, but they still can't really convert that into big territory gain, and that's not really doing anything in terms of their inside 50. So what's the point of all these possessions? And again, it ties back into yesterday's our discussion. And one thing I do want to mention, I've noticed over the last couple of days watching these footy shows, multiple people, maybe they're listeners to Locked On AFL, have been espousing the nature that hitouts means nothing as a stat. Now, I'm going to take full credit for this becoming a mainstream thing because I heard plenty of media people, oh man, they lost the hitouts, they've got to win the hitouts. And now they're all singing a different tune. So shout out to everyone on Fox Footy that is listening to this podcast and is taking my theory that I espouse from literally the first episode of this show. But that's enough of that. But yeah, Collingwood, it's a game style. A game style thing. Now, can they... this overuse or this extra use of the ball and getting the ball, can they actually convert it into something that's worthwhile? Because that hasn't been the case for them.
Yeah, it's interesting to look at these numbers. I wish I had a trumpet sound effect, by the way, for you blowing your own trumpet with that one. But I agree, I have seen a little bit of that. I want to talk the kick-to-handball ratio. We know that Collingwood play a high possession game. They always have. So this week, certainly, there's been a lot of talk about the fact that they overused the handball. I do agree with that, but let's not pretend that Collingwood doesn't always play this style where they've always got the footy. They look to hold it. They look to go wide. They look to go the short kicks. They trust their skills. If you look at the disposals per game this season, Collingwood, a plus 50 on Hawthorn. So you can expect the same again. I mean, this is a usual number that we see, but the kick-to-handball ratio last week the average for the season from rounds 1 to 4 for Collingwood, plus 44 kicks over handballs. Last week it was only plus 8. So they were definitely forced into the handball a little bit more. Rather than say that Collingwood was to blame for that, I think we sometimes get in the habit of trying to look what was wrong without crediting the opposition. Essendon laid 65 tackles. They're going at 57.3 tackles per game on the season. That's number one in the AFL. So you're talking about a pretty good pressure team in the Bombers. So they certainly contributed to that a lot. I think the other factor is, and you touched on the forward line, I think it's important because at times I think that Collingwood, in those pressure situations, don't like to just bang the ball forward because they don't like to waste the footy. And they didn't have a target there with Mason Cox. And it's not just to pick on him the whole time, but when you look at the Collingwood team for marks inside 50, Brody Majacek leads the team with 11. Then it's Jaden Stevenson with 9, Jamie Elliott with 5. And then it really drops off there. They just haven't got targets in there unless they're short hit-ups to take marks, to take big contested marks. So they need a tall player. So I'll be interested to see whether it's Mason Cox, whoever it is, they need to find someone that they really trust themselves to kick to a one-on-one marking situation and they can take contested marks, because that's the only thing I really can pull apart from this Collingwood team. Last week, they just looked inept when they went forward, which is strange for them because they've got a lot of dangerous guys around there. And clearly, we spoke about this, but they're also going to be without Jordan Tagoe, so they lose another important player. I mean, it's starting to stack up against the Pies a little bit, particularly against the Hawthorn team that will be looking to respond after getting a bit of a touch-up last week.
You talked about the kick-to-handball ratio of Collingwood, and I think there is a little bit of a double standard out there with that as well, and perhaps guilty of it. We talk about, they overuse the ball, so many handballs, but their kick-to-handball ratio is actually higher than the Western Bulldogs, who are routinely praised for their use of handball to get out of those tough situations. And you hear commentators go on, they got that handball back. It's the 2016 handballs going again. And it's super fun to watch when the Bulldogs get those handballs going out of the packs and then get that guy open. But it's, again, what you do with it in terms of, you know, when you get that handball out, can you get it to the right person? So you can have five handballs and you go, oh, you know, that's fine. But as long as it hits the right guy who can then, you know, it, whether it is Caleb Daniel on the outside, you know, does Collingwood get it to the right person in the right spot? Because they're not the worst team in terms of, well, lowest team in terms of kick-to-handball ratio, but they get piled on for overusing it where other teams overuse it more. But it's how you use it versus how much you use it in those areas.
No question. So a couple of really good ones to start the week this week. I think they've done a pretty good job with this rolling fixture of putting some interesting games on the Thursday, Friday night. Like, seeing some teams that we don't always see as well, not so much this week, although Brisbane in prime time is going to be pretty fun. We know they haven't had a lot of TV time, let's say, on Thursday, Friday nights over the last couple of years. So that's going to be fun to watch. Who knows? By next week, perhaps. We are talking about Wednesday night footy, Thursday night footy, Friday night footy. Who knows? It's going to change all in the next sort of fortnight here as they figure things out. But like I said from the top, I'm here for it. I'm here for all the different schedules, the weekly footy. We're stuck at home. Let's watch these guys play.
Yeah, exactly. We're not doing anything here. Yes, you guys in other states are doing a little bit more than what we're doing. But yeah, having footy on, as long as it's done in a sound way in terms of not putting extra risk in terms of injuries, but teams and clubs have prepared for this eventuality. They knew it was a possibility. So and the shorter quarters, yeah, we both have shit on them at times. I think this is going to be important in getting players back up for it. I just hope we don't get another seven syndesmosis injuries happening over the weekend with potential compressed games coming up, because some of these travelling parties and lists that have gone up into the hubs might be under stress if the amount of guys go down that went down for say Richmond last week.
So tomorrow, potentially, I don't want to give everything away, Josh, but maybe just a little tease, might be something different on the podcast tomorrow. We might try something different to end the week.
We might. It'll be interesting. We'll see how that goes. But I'm pretty excited either way how that little adventure pans out. But we'll have you give you more information on that tomorrow, Kane. I think we might wrap it up for today. Thank you again for chatting footy with me. With a big game tonight, your Cats, the Lions, up in the up at the old SCG. Big one to watch. Thank you again.
Yep, look forward to it. Hopefully, I'm smiling in the morning.
Guys, don't forget, subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and give us a 5-star review over on Apple Podcasts. It's a great way of getting the show out to more people. Tell your friends, share it in forums, Facebooks, whatever you want to do. Just get it out to as many people as you can. And today, I'm going to leave you with a shout out to Chance Bateman.